This is the Best of Interviews on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
We had the pleasure of talking to Nick Foles earlier. Nick Foles, always great guy to come on the show. Nick Foles, legend, Philadelphia legend, will be here Thursday night with a couple of other Eagles legends. We talked about that in the conversation with Nick. But I think the one thing that Nick shows in the conversation is how much he does appreciate Philadelphia and fans, and it's genuine when he says it. He would, if he wanted to, he could disappear and never be here ever again, right? Like, never talk about this stuff ever again.
Like, but Cliff Lee.
Like Cliff Lee. Nobody's heard from Cliff Lee, but we continue to hear from Nick Foles gladly. So here is our conversation with former Super Bowl MVP Nick Foles.
Well, thanks for joining us, Nick. We appreciate it, man.
No, absolutely. We figured it out.
So you're at the DraftKings Ultimate Kickoff at Brooklyn Bowl in Philly on Thursday. So Fletcher Cox, Terrell Owens, Brent Celek, you, David Akers, a post-game concert from Diplo. Quite a lineup there. Do you know T.O. at all?
I don't know T.O. I'm excited to just get to know him and meet him. Obviously, watched him growing up and just outstanding. I mean, shoot, I'm surprised he's not even playing in this game with what I see from him through like social media content. The way he can still move and everything is better than a lot of players out there. It's insane.
How important is a quarterback's relationship with his wide receivers?
Very important. I would say this: every receiver I've ever played with has a different personality. So as a quarterback, it's always important to get to know your guys in the locker room and off the field as much as you can, just so you know how to reach them and how to talk to them. Some guys need, you know, to get pulled aside and have a conversation. Some guys need you to fire them up. But that relationship's super important in games, because a lot of times you're throwing the ball out there and trusting them for those 50-50 balls. And you also want them to be on the same page. You want them to, you know, run the route, the depth, all these different things. But they have to respect you. They have to know you and want to listen. I know we're all professionals, but there is a human element of it, where if there's a lot of respect and you got your guys back, just human nature, you play a little bit better and a little bit harder. So that relationship's super important.
Nick, you are such a relatable person. Not only for fans on the outside, you seem to have this humility about yourself, a sense of self-awareness, especially at that position. It's sometimes hard to come by. But from I would imagine, from a teammate's standpoint and point of view, how much of your trials and tribulations as a player allow you to be relatable to the rest of your team? You know, backup, starter, Pro Bowl MVP. Like, how much of going through those experiences allows you to be such a relatable teammate for a lot of your guys?
I think it's a huge part of it. I had a coach one time say that, you know, the mountaintop experiences are a lot of reasons why people listen to you and you have opportunities, but it's through the valleys and through the trials where people can relate to you, because everyone goes through them, right? And so with my career path, the thing that I had was I had some amazing mountaintop experiences that I'm so grateful for, but it was through the hard times, through the trials, through the doubts, through the fears, through overcoming those that made me into the player that could handle different tough situations, made me into the husband and the father I am today. And then that also allows me, in a locker room, I can relate to anyone on any level of what they're going through their career for the most part. And when you can do that and someone knows you can resonate with their feelings, it makes it a lot easier to have those conversations and help each other out. So I would say, I mean, after the Super Bowl, after winning Super Bowl MVP, I went back to, you know, I wanted to stay in Philly, so we found a way for me to stay in Philly, but I went back to running scout team. And those scout team players were fired up every practice because they knew that what I had done the season prior, and they're like, man, if we're out here getting to work with him, we're going to get better, and we wanted to bring it every single day. So my goal every day was to help my teammates be better and not worry about what had happened in the past, good or bad, and just keep moving forward and ultimately impacting that locker room and wherever I'm playing.
So, Nate, sometimes a band will have like a really long career, but they have one hit that like everybody always wants to hear all the time. And sometimes you'll hear from that band, like, we don't want to play that song anymore. Like, I'm sick of talking about that song. So, like, for you, the Philly special and the Super Bowl is sort of like that hit in Philadelphia. You do not, however, seem annoyed talking about it ever or sick of talking about it. Are there ever days where you're like, enough already? I don't feel like talking about that player that day. Or every time somebody brings it up, does it bring a smile to your face?
I think I just, being in Philadelphia, being drafted in Philly, and just being around the fan base, living in South Philly for a couple of years, then downtown, being around everyone, I know how important the Super Bowl is for everyone. The Super Bowl victory, the first one, was so special because every year was like, this is going to be the year. So I know when that question is asked about the Super Bowl or the Philly special, I've been doing a series on social media about fun facts about the Philly special that people didn't know. As my brand Dad Season released the hat, I'm wearing the You Want Philly Philly hat.
There you go.
And I know that it's important to everyone asking me the question, and I try to treat it as it's the first time I got asked the question. And in my response, I don't want to shortchange it because that might be the only opportunity that person has to ask me about the question or in their way. And I want them to feel important because they are important, and every fan in Philly is important. And that's why it's so special. And it's really a great honor to have something like that with the Super Bowl and the Philly special, to have something to talk about. Not everyone gets that opportunity throughout their career to not only have a relationship with a team like Philadelphia, but the fan base. And I don't take that for granted. Fortunately, I'm so surrounded by coaching youth sports and, you know, building, you know, running the Dad Season brand and the podcast that I never really think about it too much. But it is always special when someone asks me, and I try to give them the attention they deserve.
Do you sit and think the 10-year reunion is coming up in a couple of years here, Nick?
No. Wow.
Right?
Time flies. That's for sure.
So when you think back to that second year, and in the dynamic in which you guys won the Super Bowl under, is very rare. So it's really hard to compare what the team is sort of experiencing going through now, trying to be quote unquote defending champions. You just mentioned you were the Super Bowl MVP, but you were running a scout team the next year. This team doesn't have to necessarily deal with that sort of dynamic that was there with you and Carson, who went down late in the season. But can you talk to, I guess, the difficulties and some of the pitfalls that you want to try to avoid when trying to repeat as champions? Like, what does this team, what are they going to go through this year that you guys sort of couldn't overcome in that 2018 season?
Yeah, I think the big thing is, I mean, they know it as well, being the Philadelphia Eagles, but you're going to have a bullseye on your back every single game. You're going to get every single opposing team's best effort, no matter what, because you're the defending Super Bowl champs. Like you said, the big thing is we won it with – we had so many injuries in 17 and 18. It was truly a special year in the sense of the guys who were injured were still a part of the team. They were still giving back to their teammates. They weren't just in the training room and going home. We had Hall of Famers, Pro Bowlers all in that training room, and they were always around. And that was a big part of it. This year, when they're defending champs, I mean, they have a lot of guys. I mean, all their guys, the franchise guys, are the ones that won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see what they do with it. You can tell that they're hungry. They're hyper-focused. The way Jalen Hurts speaks, he's moved on. I don't even know if he put on his Super Bowl ring at the party because he's on to the next. And I think that's the big thing, is you enjoy it, and it's something you can always treasure, especially me being retired from the NFL. I'm so grateful for those opportunities. So there'll always be time to reflect. But for those current players, they're still in it. It's a new season, and a new season brings new difficulties, new trials. So I think the big thing, too, will be for the young players. The young players, the rookies, they're going into year two and everything. Winning a Super Bowl in your first year is really special, and I think sometimes in your mind you feel like that's going to just – be the norm, but it's not, because this is the NFL and all these teams are great. The coaches, I wouldn't say this, not all the teams are great. There's some pretty bad teams out there. I'm trying to be nice, but there's some bad teams and some poorly run organizations. Philadelphia is very well run, and they have great coaches and great players. But I think you just have to sort of take what you learned before, use it as wisdom and knowledge, but then be hungry, like you were before you won the Super Bowl, and try to blend those two together. And if you can do that, you're going to do something special.
What do you think is the number one most misunderstood thing about being an NFL quarterback for the general public?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, the thing about football just in general that I think it's becoming such an individual sport in the sense of the, you know, a lot of everyone loves fantasy and loves their players. And then quarterbacks are getting paid X amount. We just saw Michael Parsons get paid this and they're focused, but it's the greatest team sport on earth. And all these quarterbacks that are doing great and having great seasons, they're doing it because they have a great team. I mean, Jalen Hurts would tell you, I mean, what a great team in Philadelphia with great coaches. Let's go with the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes, they've built that culture. Andy's built that culture for a very, very long time and then brought Pat into it, and Pat's amplified the culture that is there. So I would say for all fans out there, I mean, quarterback, obviously you have a responsibility to be great, and there's so many great quarterbacks out there. But it takes your teammates, it takes your coaches, it takes your ownership, and it takes your GM being aggressive to put the players in the locker room to ultimately give you success. And then it's your job to lead the charge. And I think we forget that sometimes. It's the greatest team sport in the world.
If you could go back and tell rookie Nick Foles one thing about the experience that might make him better or change it in one way, what would you tell him?
I would tell him just to how I approach my career was just be present in the present moment. Don't worry about tomorrow. Just focus on the day. The thing that really helped me in my career was when I joined the Kansas City Chiefs. That was a year that I really learned the structure of preparation in a week. Beforehand, I was always trying to work as hard as I could, watch as much film as I could, and do everything I can, but there was never this like elite structure of like, this is what it should be, until I was in Kansas City with Alex Smith and we had this preparation throughout the week of film study, and Andy Reid reaffirmed it with what he felt was best for us. And then I knew going into the games, I was going to be prepared and with this. So I had this structure, and then we did a similar structure in Philadelphia in 17 and 18 at prep work, because Chase Daniel, who had been in Kansas City and New Orleans, had gone to Philadelphia and helped Carson with this structure of film study. So I think for young players, the big thing is find that routine throughout the week that can put you in a position to be the most successful and feel great on game day. And then you're going to fine tune it throughout your career. At least you have something to fall back on and not worry about. And that's the thing, is that structure. I mean, looking back, even with building the dad season brand that I'm building right now, it's like finding that structure throughout the week where we can be elite. That's the biggest thing as a young player, is finding out what works for you.
Well, Nick will be at the DraftKings Ultimate Kickoff Brooklyn Bowl on Thursday. Fletcher Cox, T.O., Brent Celek, David Akers. You can get tickets at DraftKingsUltimateKickoff.com. They're free. You got to be 21. Dude, you know you're always a hero here, and you're always welcome to Philadelphia. So we appreciate your time, man. And the answer you gave about answering the Philly special question was beautiful, man, because it really is. People get that one shot, and you make it memorable for them. So thanks so much, Nick.
Always first class, brother. Yep, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
All right, let's talk to Ron Jaworski. Ron Jaworski, saw him this weekend in Stone Harbor. As I was bouncing that ball on the way to the basketball court, Jaws, I practiced an awful lot down there this weekend, and we are happy to announce that once again, every Tuesday during the football season this fall, 7:25 means Jaws on WIP. Jaws, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Joe. Great to be with you. I cannot believe I saw you in Stone Harbor as I was having ice cream with my grandkids. You were dribbling down 96th Street,
yes,
getting ready for your contact sport like basketball. But it was great to see you, Joe.
It was, Jaws. To see you and Liz was phenomenal. So let's get to it, my man. This is getting real, Jaws. Eagles play the Cowboys in 2 days. Let's start with this question. How good are the Dallas Cowboys this year?
I don't think anyone really knows right now. You know, you look at their roster, you look at their coaching staff, you really don't know what to expect from this football team. And obviously, you know, the focus has been on Micah Parsons, and, you know, certainly the loss, a huge loss for the Dallas Cowboys. But I understand why they made the move, and I think everyone's been talking about it since last week. You know, the Cowboys are not a win-now team. Their team is trying to win probably 2 or 3 years. Win the championship. We have the Vince Lombardi trophy right now. They are chasing us. They had to build their roster with draft choices. They probably, for the long haul, made the right move. But you can't lose a player like Micah Parsons, expect to come in and play the Philadelphia Eagles and win a football game on the opening game of the National Football League season on Thursday night probably the most anticipated game in Thursday night football history. So it's going to be wild Thursday night.
Jaws, let's talk about Jalen Hurts. He's been obviously one of the more widely discussed offseason topics. So he's had an incredible start to his career. He's 5 years in. He's been in two Super Bowls. He's won a Super Bowl MVP. They've won a ton of games. Hotly discussed on how good or great he is. Where do you come in through 5 years on his career, what he is, and where he goes from here?
Joe, I'm absolutely mystified by some of the treatment that Jalen Hurts receives from some of the people in my business, per se, the media business. You know, I've been around this game since 1973. I go back a long way. And Jalen Hurts has been a phenomenal quarterback as I've seen this early in his career. And you know, people, you know, we have so many analysts right now. Everyone nitpicks every part of a person's game. I try to distill it as simple as I can. The quarterback's job is to win football games. Name me a quarterback that's done a better job than Jalen Hurts in his first 5 years of this business. Just name me one. His job is to win. He doesn't care who gets the glory. He's an unselfish player. He's a team leader. I know so many people in the organization that are very close to him. I know Jalen pretty well. I'm not saying I'm close to Jalen. But, you know, I can let his performance speak for itself. It's been great on the field. He's been great off the field. He keeps his nose clean. He's a great leader of the football team. He's strong in the community. And the list goes on and on and on. I do not understand why Jalen Hurts does not get respect of being one of the best quarterbacks, if not the best quarterback in the National Football League, because of one reason. He wins. The name of the game is to win. Jalen Hurts is a flat-out winner.
What about the argument, Jaws, there's a ton around him? I've made this point many times. You know, he's pretty good, but there's a ton around him, and that makes him look better than I think he empirically is. What about that argument?
Duh. You know, hey, you know, football is the consummate team game. It's 11 players and every single play working in harmony to be successful. The quarterback certainly is the beneficiary of talent. Howie Roseman, Jeffrey Lurie have done a phenomenal job of building this football program to one of the best, if not the best, in the National Football League right now. It's been a hell of a run. And certainly, football being the consummate team game, the quarterback is the beneficiary of that. No question, that is a great team around him. But that's how you become successful in the greatest of all team sports, football.
After this game, holy cow, right in the next couple of days, how will we perceive that Jalen has changed? This is a little prediction radio right now. How will this new offense how will he have adapted? How will we perceive he has grown after this game, Jaws?
Yeah, John, I'm not looking for anything. He's shown me enough of what he can do as a quarterback, as a leader, as a team-friendly guy. I mean, Jalen does not care about numbers. He just doesn't.
That's true.
And as you know, John, that's unusual for quarterbacks.
It really
we love
is.
The numbers, you know?
Yeah. I guess that's why some people don't know what to make of it still, Jaws.
Well, you know, because, you know, he does so many things. To me, it's been fun watching him grow from the outside as an analyst and seeing not only his mental approach to the game, the way he's gotten better, reading blitzes, getting the ball out of his hand. Now, any quarterback in this league is going to have some food bars every once in a while, but sure, he has very few of those. And when you look at his offenses, the offense is going to have to carry this team, by the way, I think early in the season until the defense finds their way. But, you know, you got Steen starting a right guard. Other than that, you've got the same team coming back from a Super Bowl championship. So I'm excited about this offense. I'm excited about Jalen Hurts. I'm excited that, you know, Kevin Petullo is going to take over this offense. I think he'll probably be a little more aggressive than Kellen Moore was. At least I kind of get that feeling. I think you'll see this offense open up a little more.
Open it up like attack downfield, aerially speaking?
Well, you don't want to take the ball to Saquon Barkley's hand, but I think the opportunities will be there just like they were in the Super Bowl. When you're running the football, all of a sudden the safety starts cheating up and you get those shots down the field. I think you will see a much more open offense. I really do.
I love the sound of that. So tell us about Darius Cooper, John Mechie, the new additions who would be beneficiaries of a, you know, enhanced passing attack.
Well, Mechie is tough. And, you know, if you're going to play that slot position, not only is he quick and fast, he's tough. And if you're going to play inside, he can play inside and outside. He can get you yards after the catch. And those 50-50 balls, I got a funny feeling when Howie looks at bringing wide receivers in. He may have a stat somewhere that says, I love guys that those 50-50 balls, my guy catches 90 and goes 90-10. Mechie's one of those guys. Contested catches, He's not the biggest, maybe strongest, but man, he is tough as nails. I like receivers like that.
Yeah, it seems like ever since when Alshon got here, they've gotten better at that. Because Deshaun and Macklin were horrible at that. They were well above average, but they were not go catch it in the air in traffic guys. And
strong-handed.
But you're right, today's NFL is about those contested catches. Yeah. I mean, the athletes I now see in the NFL are so incredible. And I don't care how good your wide receivers are. You know, your separation is now a yard. That's winning, a yard, not 5 yards, yeah, like you watch a college game. In the NFL, you win by a yard. That's a significant amount. Most catches are contested. And I think the guys that catch those 50-50 balls 90% of the time are the guys that have long-term success in the NFL.
Charles, let's talk about the defense. You know, probably one of the two best defenses the Eagles ever had was last year, that and the 91 group. How concerned are you with what they've lost, with what they've added? Where do you come out on what the defense will be?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm a little concerned when you lose the quality of players they lost, either just basically free agency or trades or guys that just moved on. There's always a concern to rebuild the defense because defense is about communication. And if you don't spend a lot of time together in a game-type situation, sometimes the communication lacks. But I trust Vic Fangio, and I almost feel like we had the same conversation last year. You know, Vic's coming in as his first year as a coordinator and, a lot of new faces. But as the season evolved last year, this defense came together to become, in my opinion, the best defense in the National Football League a year ago. Could they repeat it this year? We'll see how it evolves this year. But Vic Fangio is one of the best, if not the best, defensive coach in the National Football League. It will be good.
Jaws, Saquon Barkley, I've got the numbers in front of me from last year. It's 482 touches. When you count the postseason, it's a whopper, 482. Would you, if you're Nick Sirianni, make a point to dial him back this year, or would you lean on him just the same?
I would dial him back if that's possible. My God, what an incredible year. And that's a lot of touches you just mentioned, Joe. And, football's a game of attrition. Your body can only take so much. He's had a history of injuries when he was with the Giants, but obviously he comes to Philadelphia with a much better offensive line. But, the body wears down. And I think the more carries you get, the more wear and tear in the body, the less effective you are. But, hey, I hate to say don't give Saquon the ball, but I think you need to protect him.
Other side of the ball, the big question, who do you think is best suited to start in the base at cornerback opposite Quinyon, Jaws?
Can we flip a coin? There's deep analysis right there. I wish someone would have come out and said, okay, I'm going to take this job. If Ringo, be a Dory Jackson. No one has really stepped up and said, hey, it's my job. So, that eventually will figure itself out. The coaching staff will find a way to find the best player and put him on the field. But no one is really separated at the cornerback number two position.
That's rough. Who do you think it's going to be?
The key last year was our secondary really came together early. And there was you had wily old veterans in there. Now you're going to have guys that really aren't as seasoned as you'd like to have back there.
You know what it reminds me of, Jaws? You'll remember in 2017, the Eagles had a guard to start the year. It might have been Chance Warmack, John. And I think it was two games in. I think it was two games in, and they said, all right, you're out. And Wisniewski, you're in. And I could just see, look, it could be they could still trade for someone. It could be one of these guys that are here. We'll see. All right, Jaws, a lot of other stuff to get.
I'll make just one statement back to that secondary. The quickest way to lose games in the National Football League is be weak at corner. And we know what Quinyon is, one of the best in business now. We got to solve that number two spot because you don't want to have a weakness at the cornerback position.
And, Jaws, I'll say this, and I think this will resonate with all Eagles fans listening. We saw the Eagles last decade lose a lot of games because of that issue. Not in 2017, but you go back to some of the Chip years, there were some really weak corner years. And, James, you remember the Cowboys game when frickin' who was the receiver? Dez Bryant.
Yeah.
The three touchdowns in 2014.
Yeah. Bradley Fletcher.
And then Deshaun got them the next week, and it sunk the season. Anyway. All right, Jaws, let's get some other stuff. Who is the biggest threat to the Eagles in the NFC? Last year it was a healthy Detroit, but they weren't a healthy Detroit at the end of the year. Who's the best NFC team besides the Eagles?
Oh, I think the Green Bay Packers right now, getting Micah Parsons made them kind of the team that'll challenge the Eagles. There's no doubt in my mind.
Jaws, have the Kansas City, did the Super Bowl, let's broaden this out a little NFL stuff here across the lake.
Yeah, I love it.
Did the Super Bowl show that the Kansas City Chiefs aren't the Kansas City Chiefs anymore? They still have Mahomes and Reed, but the infrastructure might not be what it used to be. Yes or no?
Yes, they're still a team to beat in the AFC. They don't have to rebuild. They're going to reload. They have great talent. They were depleted in their offensive line. We got them at a good time last year. Joe Tooney could not block anybody up front playing left tackle for the Chiefs. He's now not part of their team anymore. I think defensively they were banged up as well. I spent some time with Steve Spagnuolo down the Jersey Shore in June, and clearly he thinks that they've rebuilt their defense to a point where they'll be back to where they were before they had suffered all those injuries. So I think the Chiefs are still a tough team in the AFC.
What about Washington, Jaws? They were coming on at the end of the year. Eagles thumped them, but some of that was Washington kept fumbling the ball. How good are they?
They're good. There's no question. You know, they solved their quarterback issue. You know, Jaden Daniels is one of the best. He had a phenomenal season last year. I don't think they're as deep as the Eagles are right now. That'll be the advantage for us.
All right, Jaws. And final thing, and we're going to be doing it with every guest. And reminder to everyone listening, Jaws with us every Tuesday, 7:25 to about 7:40 every Tuesday. Jaws, final thing, we'll do it with each guest this week before the game. Season prediction. Let's find out if James Seltzer has his drum roll ready. John Ritchie, I say he does not. I think he's scrambling around.
Give me a drum roll.
Ron Jaworski, the 2025 Eagles in a 17-game season. How many regular season wins?
12 wins, Joe. Thank you for the drum roll.
You got it. A 12-5. And will that be a division winner? It seems like it probably would, but not a sure thing. 12 wins, does that get it done?
Yes, it does. 12 right. wins and you win it.
Love it. Jaws, stay well, pal. We so look forward to talking to you each week. Wonderful seeing you down the shore this weekend, and we'll see you soon. Thanks, Jaws.
You guys, it's going to be a fun year.
Absolutely. All right, the great Ron Jaworski.
And what a panel we have right now. Alongside myself and Hugh Douglas, Ray Dittinger hanging out for one more segment, and joining us right now, Jason Avant. Jason, what's up, man?
A.K.A. Mr. Salsa Dancer himself.
I'm doing well. How you guys doing?
We're doing great, fine. Man. We're great. I mean, we're ready for this thing to kick off as the Eagles are defending a championship. Jason, let's just start with this. I'm not gonna waste anyone's time with how good are the Eagles. We know they're good. How great do you think this team is? Last time we watched them, they were great. They were the best team in the NFL. Now, there were some changes this offseason. How great do you think this team is?
They have the potential to repeat. That's the thing that you have. You have the potential to. Now, being down, you know, basically six defensive starters, if you include Isaiah Rodgers, will hurt. And I think that move in the offseason was probably one of the bigger ones because it was only 2 years, $11 million that Vikings gave him. So that position will be a problem. But at the same time, we're talented. As talented as any roster in football, and then you have the championship pedigree, and then you have a lot of people still naysaying Jalen Hurts, which will galvanize the team and cause him to play at a heightened level. So I think this team is in prime position to repeat.
So you mentioned, we'll get to the Hurts things. I think that's a really interesting angle on what he's going to do this season. But the defense, Ray,
yep.
They lost those six players that Jason just mentioned.
Right.
We talked about the offense a little bit earlier when you first hopped in. What's your expectation for the defense and what Vic Fangio can do with what they do still have, because there still is a lot here. They lost a lot. There's still a lot here. Last year, they were number one. What do you think of what they have and what Fangio could do with it for this season?
I think they'll still be in the top 10 when it comes to defense, right? So you lose guys, but Moro Jomo's coming. He's coming along, right? So top three in the league when it comes to pass rush rate. So I think that he needs more reps. You get a lighter and not eating so many Twinkies in Jordan Davis. And hopefully he can put together a season that can contribute. And we're depending a lot on Jalix Hunt right now because of Brandon Graham and Josh Sweat. So it's just these young players may just need the reps. We saw them shine and do really well. They just need the reps. And if that happens where the defensive line can play at the level that they did last year, remember, we had no dynamic pass rusher like a guy that's going to go out and get you a bunch of sacks like Micah Parsons. We did it collectively, and I think this group will do that again collectively. So it's all predicated upon that defensive line. We have a problem at the cornerback position, but we have a way around it. We have a lot of workarounds. You have Cooper, you have Cooper DeJean that can play safety. He can play outside. He can play nickel. If one of those guys outside isn't playing well, you can move him outside, move Mac McWilliams inside. There's a bunch of different ways. Makumba can play inside. There's a bunch of different ways that you can come up with a game plan that can get you through the season still winning ball games.
Yeah, they have options. I mean, Ray, they've developed a system of drafting where these guys are very versatile. Makumba, yeah, as Jason just mentioned, mm-hmm, Cooper. That, I think that will help them a lot in the secondary. Ray, what's your feeling on how good this defense could be? Because there's two ways to look at it. Wow, they lost six guys off the best defense. Those guys were good players. Or they still have Jalen Carter, Cooper DeJean, Quinyon Mitchell, Zach Bond, Jahad Campbell now. That's a good base of a defense, even if you ignore what they lost, Nolan Smith. Where do you come down on how good this defense will be?
Yeah, I think you just said it pretty well, Joe. I think that when I look at the team, I'm not too worried about the front seven. I think the front seven is going to be fine. And to Jason's point, the reason I feel that way is there are some really, really talented young players there that just needed the opportunity to play more. And I think the second half of last year and down the stretch and into the postseason even, when Ojomo got a chance to play more and Hunt got a chance to play more, you saw what these kids were capable of. So does losing Sweat and losing William? Yeah, of course. And losing Graham obviously hurts. But you've got some young kids there that I feel are ready to step up and take that on. And the other guy we really haven't talked about but I think is going to be a big player for this team is Jahad Campbell. I was sort of amazed that they were able to get him at 31. I mean, to me, he was like a top 12 to 15 player in that draft. But teams are concerned about the shoulder injury. I understand that. But he winds up sitting on the board at the bottom of the first round, and the Eagles go get themselves a chance to get a really, really good player who has the kind of versatility that a coach like Vic Fangio can really maximize. I mean, this is a guy that can certainly play off-ball linebacker. I mean, he can do that, and that's probably how he's going to start. But he can also be a very good edge rusher. And, you know, Jason was talking about the pass rush, and that's one of the areas you're going to say you're a little concerned about. But I think if they have an issue in terms of getting to the passer, they can line Campbell up on the edge and let him rush the quarterback, and he's proven he can do that too. My greater concern, not so much the front seven, but it is the secondary. It is finding that other corner who's going to play opposite Mitchell, who to me is already an elite corner. I think he's one of the best in the league right now and is only going to get better. But that other spot, I think they wanted it to be Ringo. He didn't really take control of that position in the preseason. Jackson's got it for now. But here's my feeling. I think that not too deep into this season, it's going to be Bennett. I think probably we get to week five, week six. Once he's really absorbed the system and the coach has developed the confidence in him, I think before it's all said and done, he's going to be the guy because he's got real tools, Joe. He's really good.
Q, when they traded for him, we were at camp that next day, and it struck you that how quickly they got him there. It feels like
he's coming for a starting job.
Yeah, they believe in him. It's just a matter of how quickly he's ready for it.
See, since Ray Diddy and Jason are here, I they tried to diminish the fact that I made it a big deal that he came on a red eye. Like, they brought him in to get him up to speed quickly as possible. Like, he came in the day they traded for him on a red eye. So, and I had a chance to talk to him, and he didn't come out and directly say it. But he's looking at this as an opportunity to start because before he got hurt or whatever happened with the Raiders, he was out there making plays. He was on the field. So he's looking at it as an opportunity to come in and get a star job. So I think you're right. He is going to be the guy eventually.
I absolutely feel. I think he's – it's probably week five, week six, he's going to be the guy.
I have a question for both of y'all. Because you said something about picking up the defense and how quickly guys are getting out there. Jahad Campbell, is a potential that he's going to start. Are either one of you surprised that that's the case, given what we know about the Vic Fangio defense and the fact that, you know, he hasn't played at this level? I know we had the rookies play last year in the secondary, but either one of you surprised that he potentially is the starter?
I'm not surprised because when you look at last year, he was forced to put a bunch of guys into a system before they were acclimated into it, right? Mm-hmm. So you put N'Kobe Dean out there. You put a bunch of guys out there, Zach Bond. So I think he's comfortable with that. You got to realize, or we have to realize, that it's more so of a long season. So these coaches are viewing it as we may take some lumps early, but by week five or week six that he's a veteran at that moment. So I think that it's better to get him in now, make the mistakes, go through the process, and he be a veteran for when it's really winning time.
Yeah, I think he's really good. I mean, really, really good. I mean, he's on play a ton at Alabama, obviously. but he's such an explosive player and so much versatility. I mean, he can do a lot of different things, and that's why putting him in the hands of a defensive coach like Vic Fangio, who is so good at playing the players' strengths and letting them play the game where they're the strongest. That's Vic's stock and trade. I mean, you know, that's what he did with Zach Bond. I mean, he brings him in, a guy that was a fringe player and a special teams guy in New Orleans. He looked at his skill set and said, hey, man, this guy's a perfect off-ball linebacker. You put him on the field, you give him that opportunity. He's a finalist for Defensive Player of the Year. Yeah, and I think that, you know, Campbell was an elite player in college. To me, as I said, I think he was a top 10, top 12 draft pick, should have been. The Eagles get him at 31, and I think Vic saw it right away. And that's why he's got him. I was a little bit surprised that he's going to be starting week one, because Vic is normally the kind of old-school coach that brings guys along a little slower than that. Mm-hmm. But I think this kid is so special that he wants him on the field right away.
Well, I want to make 2 points about this with Jahad Campbell. How special he is, because they knew that they had a problem with the third corner, right? The guy's going to play opposite of Quinyon. You had Will Johnson there from Michigan. You had a bunch of guys that you could have went and got. You also knew that you would be losing Mekhi Becton. So losing Mekhi Becton, you could have got a right guard or something like that. So they said, you know, we're going to prioritize a position we don't really need, even though you have N'Kobe Dean there who played out of his mind last year. Right. So they must think that Jahad Campbell is the steal of the draft to have that many needs and a player that is flourishing in his position in N'Kobe Dean, and you bring a guy in over him. I think that says a lot about Jahad Campbell. And the other point of this is that when you look at their weaknesses, we have a bunch of pieces that can translate into an additional piece like a third corner. Think about Tanner McKee. He is draft capital right now or trade right now. You think about N'Kobe Dean. He's draft capital right now or trade right now if Jahad Campbell plays really well. So I think Howie Roseman has a lot of bullets in his gun in order to facilitate any trade that we need in order to take us to the promised land again.
Well, and he has 13 picks next year anyway, even without those guys. Yeah. So there's a lot. I mean, the one thing about Campbell, and then Ray, I want you to tell us about your latest play you have going on to give us the details. But you mentioned Campbell and the ability to have maybe him rush off the edge. He was with us, Hugh. We had him in camp one day. He came in our RV and sat down.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched him on TV in the big games Alabama played. I was struck with how big he was when he sat next to me.
He's a grown-ass man.
He's built like Micah Parsons, more than he's built like your today's inside linebacker. Like I was like, wow, this – when he fills out, he can definitely rush off the edge. All right, Ray, we appreciate you being with us today. Tell everyone about the latest play you've got going on.
Yeah, well, I've actually got 2 plays that are going to be running back, literally back-to-back. Tommy and Me, which has been around, believe it or not, Joe, this will be the 10th year of Tommy and Me. This will be year number 10 for Tommy and Me. It's coming back to the People's Light Theater out in Malvern, October the 7th through the 18th. Hope you can come out and see it. But before that, I've written a new play, and it's going to have its world premiere, quote-unquote, world premiere, September 17th through October the 5th. It's called Spinner. And it's going to be at the Delaware Theater Company. And this one is, most people assume that it'd be a football play. It's not. This is a play about ice hockey in the 1970s. The slapshot, rough and tumble era of hockey. That's what this play is about. And we open September 17th. We run through October the 5th. Delaware Theater Company. I hope folks come out and see it.
I can't wait to check it out. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage, Terrell Owens. T.O., 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 T.O.
Phil's lineup's out.
What's up?
Good.
What's up, big dog?
I'm good.
Ladies and gentlemen, Terrell Owens!
It never gets old.
That's how you bring them out.
Oh, man, the pit bull is here.
so you heard that.
I did. I missed that.
No, I said, it's like, you know, I said, this is the first time. Okay, I'm going to let this go first.
It's
So
okay, so can I? Okay, so now can I tell my story?
You can tell your story.
So we were talking this morning, and it was like, well, so what is this like going to be like with TLC? I said, well, it's kind of like a pit bull that's off a leash. You don't know who the owner is. You don't know what's going to happen. Right. You know what they say about pit bulls, but all pit bulls aren't the same.
It's true.
I said, but he's a pit bull.
They can be temperamental.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I said, so we gonna be cool. And if the pit bull ain't cool, then I guess that's what it's going to be today.
It's all good.
It's cool. Yeah.
It's all good. It's all good.
So before we get into the conversation with you and Hugh, what is it, T.O., about you and Philadelphia that has kept up? I mean, we're 20 years later.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a long time, 20 years later. What do you think it is? Why do you think the reaction is like this when you come back?
Number one, I think they knew what they were getting when the Eagles acquired me from San Francisco. And then I've always been a blue-collar guy. You know, I've always been a hard worker. I understand the city of Philly, the fans here. They're passionate. That's how I grew up. You know, my grandmother, she raised me to be passionate and to believe in who I am and stand on my beliefs. I was a God-fearing man. And just with Hugh saying, you know, you don't know who the owner is, but with the pit bull, the dog on the leash, that owner was my grandmama. She had me on that leash. And like I said, Hugh and I, like I said, we haven't seen each other in years. But like I said, she always taught me to take up for myself. And that was one of those situations we came to a situation and I had to defend myself. So, like I said, that's a big guy. That's a big guy. You know what I mean? that's a big guy. But at the end of the day, man, when you think about just coming here and doing what I did, and I was wanting the opportunity to come here and try to win a Super Bowl, yeah. And I tried not to disappoint. You know, I wanted to be good as advertised. I always talk about now that I'm in the Hall of Fame. When I first got nominated in 2016, I thought about and I reflected on my career. And when I reflected on that career, part of it was really just that year and seven games that I played here. I thought about the desire and dedication and the discipline to it that enabled me to come in and play with the passion. And then even, like I said, you know, being hurt late in that first season, having only 6.5 and 7 weeks to get ready for the Super Bowl with a broken leg, fibula, and I had torn all the ligaments in my ankle, 2 screws in a plate. I wanted so desperately to win something that they hadn't done in so many years here. We didn't accomplish that, but we got close to it.
I tell you, man, listening to you talk about, you know, that run-up to the Super Bowl, before we address the elephant in the room, I remember you being in the training room at some point during that time, mm-hmm. and you know how we all be in the training room hanging yeah. out, and you were saying then, just get us there to the Super Bowl and I'll be ready. I'll
yeah.
be there.
Yeah, yeah. I did an interview on the way back from surgery from the hospital. I don't know if it was this radio station, but I did an interview and they asked me, was I going to be ready for the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
And I said, if those guys get to the Super Bowl, I'll be ready.
He never wavered in that, man. And that was, we hadn't even seen hyperbaric chambers back then, so we didn't know what the hell.
That was new stuff.
you were like one of the first athletes that was truly into sports science, innovative stuff.
I was seeing you out there with the rubber band stretching.
That I remember
everything.
The core workouts were bananas. Like the core workouts would be like 30 and 40 minute workouts.
Prior to the workout.
It was bananas.
That's why you still look like this, man.
Yeah, well, you know, I try to do what I can do, man.
Looking good.
Just in case, you know, they need me for third down, red zone.
Dude, I'm available. And he ain't joking either.
No,
he's dead serious.
I'm dead serious.
he's dead serious. All right, so they put me in the middle of you two because I'm like Mills Lane. I'm an official, right?
We could have sat right beside each other. There's nothing going on. Over the years, like I said, you addressing the elephant in the room. Like I said, that was years ago. We both have matured. I'm sure we take ourselves back to that situation. I'm sure we both could have done, you know, a lot of things.
We definitely could have handled it differently.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
I love that. All right, so I only got a couple questions here. First of all, was there a victor? Anybody win or did anybody no loss?
Listen, let me tell you.
That was okay. No bloodshed.
No bloodshed.
None of that.
Okay.
I don't know for T.O., but
It was one of it was. I used to call it. I probably can't say it on air because Spike might want to dump it. But we both swung and missed.
Right.
And when I tell people that story, they never believe it. The most action happened, if you might remember, when we were in the hallway and I was talking to Donovan, and I was talking about what happened, and T.O. went in the hallway and he said, "Hey, if somebody else wants some, he can get some too." And I looked at Donovan, right?
Right, exactly.
And I said, "Well, he ain't talking about me. I said, "He ain't talking to me."
Right.
I said, he got to be talking to you.
Let's not steer this thing in the wrong direction.
No. All I'm saying is, it was.
We both have the same account of what's going on.
That's what I'm saying.
I basically spoke what you were saying.
It was basically, we exchanged words.
Right.
We tussled.
That was a little bit of a tussle. And
then they broke us up.
Right. Trotter stood, got in between us, and that was it. Later on, Trotter was like, "Bro, I knew you were strong, but I didn't know you were that strong."
No, dog. Let me tell you, because you didn't know this story. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
So Trot grabs me and puts me in the headlock, right? So I go in the hallway because I leave out the building, right? So I'm breathing hard as hell. And Trey was like, "What's wrong?" I said, "Yeah, man, me and T.O. just got in a tussle." He said, "He pretty strong, ain't he?" I said, "Hell yeah." I said, "Listen, I said, I don't know what was going to happen, but I said, I knew I had to make it quick." I was like, "I had to make it quick." But I was like, "That cat right there." I was like, "Yeah, he pretty strong."
I tell you, and hearing it third party, quite frankly, you hear so many different stories, T.O., you don't know what the hell to believe.
Right, right.
And when it's former teammates telling the story, they always add their own little sauce story. So listening to Trey tell the story, all I knew was you had got out the aquatic pool.
He was butt naked at one point.
I didn't say butt naked.
You know Trey said he was butt naked.
Yes, you had your tights on. T.O. had his tights on.
I wasn't naked.
And you tried him, Hugh. He didn't even dry off yet. You tried to get him when he wasn't ready.
Okay, can I tell the story?
No, you tried him.
Can I tell the story? Let me tell you.
He tried to sneak you, T.O. He tried to get you. You wasn't ready yet. But T.O. was ready to go, Hugh.
No, what happened was I came in there because T.O. came. Like, he was, okay, we going back, he was listening to the show. Somebody said something.
Yeah.
And I assume Angelo Cataldi.
Yeah, there you go.
I assume, I don't know this for sure because this is the part of the story I don't know. Right. I assume somebody told him that I said something about him.
Right.
So T.O. was like, "We got a bunch of haters in the building." And I'm like, "Hold up, dog. I ain't said nothing about you." I did sit there and didn't say a
rock in the crowd and somebody a holler.
So be quiet. So I went in the hydro pool and I was like, I'm talking trash and I'm like, "Yo, dog, if you wanna mix it up, we can." I use more colorful language than that.
Right. Yeah.
And he said, "Wait a minute."
It wasn't too long because I had to raise up out of that. I told Rick, I said, "Rick, get me up out of here."
He said, "Wait a minute." So then I thought about it, right? And I said, "You know what, Hugh? You're not even supposed to be in here." I said, so I went. And so you remember Don Smolinski was in there.
Okay. Yep.
So Don was in there. And we traumatized Don.
Don was in there?
Was in the locker room.
Okay.
So me and T.O. talking to each other like we on the streets of Atlanta. We calling each other everything. But the child of God. So it was like, okay, he said, "Okay." He said, "Stay right there. I'll be right back." So I'm leaving. I said, "Man, I got to go because I ain't supposed to be here. I'm already out of line and whatever." So when he came back, he was like, "What's up?" And I'm like, "Man, I am here."
Yeah.
Like you see the cat. I'm like, "Dog, he's a big dude."
Yeah.
I ain't about to take the chance.
Your shoulder was hurt too, though.
Oh, yeah. But I was like, "Yeah,
trying to help him out."
No, listen. So I'm like, okay, you know how they say pause.
Yeah.
What would you do in this situation? I was like, "Dog, I got to swing first because if he swing on me, he might hit me with a shot and put me to sleep." So I swung, he ducked it, and then he swung. And I ducked it, and we tussled.
Right, that's me, yeah.
Trot grabbed me, and I'm like, "Oh, dog, Trot grabbed me." And he said, "Somebody grab T.O., and that was it.
Yeah, that was it.
All right, we started talking trash, and that was it.
And you know what? We're all here. We're brothers.
Yeah. Yes,
we're all here.
Man, listen. That's so crazy. And this is the thing. This is the thing that nobody knew.
Yeah.
Every now and then, like T.O. has some stuff that happened in his life, and I had some stuff that happened in mine, and he reached out to me. And I reached out to him, and we would always talk. We tried to get him on the show a couple times, but the schedules just didn't match up. But it was never – that's why I always thought it was funny when people say, "Well, you and T.O. got it." I say, "All right, dude, whatever you think." Because at some point, because I'm pretty sure you heard I whooped your ass and you whooped mine right. by who different people.
right.
So at some point, you just got to let the story be whatever the story is.
Right.
So I just got to the point where I was like, all right, then whatever you say.
Right, exactly.
You know, it was just like, whatever you say.
All right. What's your version of the story?
exactly.
Well, I'll tell you though, the way Hugh describes it sounds like every potential fight I've ever been in that I'm just hoping somebody shows up and pulls us away from each other. Yeah. It's like, oh no, am I in this situation? I hope somebody grabs him.
All right, so T, we'll get off of that topic because there were so many other great things. Man, that happened
can I just
short
talk
time.
About Go the, right ahead. One of the greatest plays that I've ever seen you make? And I tell this story all the time.
Which
we're playing
one
the Baltimore. Yeah, it was so many, especially
sure,
as an Eagle.
Yeah.
But dog, it was a crossing route, and we were playing the Baltimore Ravens. It was a tight game, and I remember Donovan threw a pass, but it was
a
low.
Slant.
It was low.
Oh, the low when he scrambled.
Yeah, and it was low, and dude. You didn't break stride, and you picked that thing up off the tops of your shoelaces. Yes. You remember that, Ike? And yeah. I was like,
"Is that the moment
like,
he did the Ray Lewis?"
Yeah, and he took it in. It was. But the thing that made the play so special is because you was running full speed, and when you ran full speed, it didn't look like you was running full speed. But you picked that thing up with both hands, and you grabbed it. Like a baby falling out of a building and was the flash and caught it right before it hit the ground and took it into this. I said, this cat right here.
Relax. Like
this. Yeah, slow down here.
No, but you know, I don't get to see. Like,
I know, this is like barbershop talk.
Yeah, it is like, barbershop talk. Damn. I was like,
you got to watch it. You got to watch it.
I was like, damn, did you see it? I was like, that was, I've never seen anybody make a play that looks anything close to what that was.
You know, you may be talking about when we played the Cowboys when I spit the linebacker.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Hell, it was so many. Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Take your pick.
Yeah, I think that's what you meant. Yeah. We had like a little Texas rap with a little slam.
I know that play.
And then spit the linebackers. Yeah.
You see this crowd, T.O., right? They're all out for you.
Yeah.
The thing I remember.
Thank you. Thank you guys.
One of the things I remember, it was like our first, when we went up to Lehigh. And it's like 25,000 fans trying to get into the stadium to watch practice, man.
Every morning.
And a lot of that year was because we had acquired you on the team. What did you think about that, going up there, seeing these fans? Like, what was your first impression of the Eagles fans? When did you realize, like, man, this is different?
Honestly, because that was my first year, so I thought this is what you guys had every year. I thought this is what was going on every training camp. But then, obviously, talking to Freddie and a lot of the guys, and they were like, no, people, it's not like this.
Yeah.
So it was like tens of thousands every morning at practice. But, again, that was part of what came with me as far as the stardom. And, again, that was part of, like, why I wanted to compete and why I wanted to be here to try to help win the championship. And so that was some of my fondest memories. Like I said, I'll never forget it. But, yeah, I loved being here in Philly when I played here. And just unfortunate that it ended the way that it did.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm unfortunate how it ended. And I'm going to ask, and you know, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit.
Right.
What happened to the Monday night get-togethers, man? When we used to have the Monday night get-together.
Shoot, that was the lounge.
That's what I'm saying, but what happened?
Man, I don't know. Well, they can't happen if I'm not here.
No, I'm talking about they just abruptly stopped one time. The Monday night, yeah.
Oh, I don't recall that. You must have been sick that week.
Oh, man. Because
I just was like,
it was happening every Monday night.
I don't know.
It was happening every Monday night.
Yeah. Would you want to let everyone know what was the Monday night?
Well, he knew inside stuff.
Well, he knew what I was talking about.
Said
it on the air.
Well, yeah. we would just watch. We would read the Bible and watch Monday night football. We would fellowship on Monday night.
Sounds like a Hugh night.
Yeah, we would fellowship on Monday nights.
That's what was so crazy about, you know, people saying that I didn't get along with my teammates and things of that nature.
Yeah.
But I had Monday night football gatherings, get-togethers at my house every Monday night.
And read scripture.
Yeah.
I don't know if we were reading scriptures.
Yeah.
Maybe afterwards.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I invited everybody. Coy, Ty.
Yeah.
I mean, Jason Short, everybody. Freddie. Everybody was over there. Donovan came over. He was a designated bartender.
Always.
Go figure. But we had a good time. We had a good time.
Yeah.
You're a Hall of Fame, amazing career. Your time in Philly, does it – we remember it as big. Like, it's a big part of our history as Eagles fans. Is your time here as big a part of your career as we remember it?
Absolutely. I mean, I can't say enough about, honestly, the Eagle fans and my short stint that I had here. Because people ask me all the time, either, like, you know, what team did you enjoy playing for the most or the best? Or, like, you know, who was your favorite coach? And I always say in between the Eagles and the Cowboys, I had some of my best years here with the Eagles. And sometimes, like, now being on social media, I don't know a lot about, like, some of my stats and some of my highlights. I get a lot of this information from a lot of Philly fans. Like, I didn't know that I played in 21 games and I scored 20 touchdowns. Yeah. So that shows you the efficiency in which, you know, we were scoring as an offense and how big of a part that I was of that offense. And like I said, it's just unfortunate how things, you know, happen. And I think over the course of the years, when everybody tried to put the blame on me and said I was the reason why things fractured, I think now people kind of have seen, like, you know, what that reason may have been. We're not going to go delve into it, but everybody tried to say that I was the issue, I was the problem. But I think if you see my career and if you watched and saw how things unfolded over the course of the years that I haven't been here, been in Philly, you know that I wasn't the problem.
And I tell you what, I mean, I only got a chance to play with him for a year. I was here in 04. But I played with other guys that have played with T.O. When I was in Atlanta. Obviously, the teammates we had here, he's right. When you talk about a teammate, the guy's a consummate teammate. You know, I remember, T.O., when you would get your shipment of shoes, your Nikes and your Jordans and stuff would come in. Like, you would, younger players, yeah, right, the younger guys who didn't necessarily have big contracts or whatever, you're giving them Jordans, you're giving them shoes, right, you're looking out for them, right? So when you talk about a guy being a teammate, you know, I don't know if there are many guys out there, especially when you talk about a player of your status and stature, was it had more of a down-to-earth sort of humility about him. And when people hear you say T.O. and humility, they think about him on the field and how he celebrated, and they feel like he's a showboat guy, what have you. But off the field, and when he's around the fellas, he was just one of the guys, man. He was one of the guys.
No, I was. I honestly feel like I was grossly misunderstood, especially by a lot of people that covered and followed the Eagles at that time, coming over from San Francisco. You have your Sal Palantonios of the world. You have your Skip Bayless.
Name. Those tell it. Get them.
Those are the guys that created this narrative that I was a certain individual. And like I said, they couldn't separate the player versus the person. Obviously, when I got on the field, I was a different animal. I stepped up my game. I tried to, you know, play at the highest level in which they acquired me. And so they just, honestly, they couldn't. Like I said, they went with information that they heard from people that obviously probably didn't like me. So if you think about a 53-man roster, and you hear, like, maybe one or two people that didn't like me, they don't speak for the majority of the locker room. And that's what happened, and that's what followed me throughout the course of my career.
When we were talking about this in our meeting yesterday, I mentioned I read your book when it came out. And what happens with people who are famous is that they become almost like a cartoon character to people. They get defined by one or two traits. And when you hear everything about somebody, this goes for everybody, you in this case, is like when you read it and you're like, oh, I understand who he is, right, which sort of lets you understand why he may have done this that way or why he may have done that way. But people don't usually get all of that. You know, they can't. They don't have enough time.
No, and I always try to liken it to, like, I mean, everybody watch have these Marvel comics. You think about, like, you know, Spider-Man. You know, there's Peter Parker. You have the Incredible. You have David Banner, Incredible Hulk. Yeah. You have, you know, Wonder Woman. You have Diana. So when I played, T.O. was sort of like that Marvel
character,
mm-hmm, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so, again, you had T.O. on the football field, and I was Terrell off the football field. And a lot of people never got a chance to know Terrell.
Yep.
And they went along with what they heard about T.O., and that wasn't always factual.
Well, let me say this, because the next segment, if it's okay with you, we wanted to play Jack as, like, your five most memorable Philly moments, and we're going to play them for you and
sure,
see if you remember.
It's hard to condense it down to five, but I mean, 20 touchdowns in 21 games is pretty damn good.
But I do want to say this with you and Hugh, me as a fan, not having been, you know, in that situation with you guys, it means something, I think, to me and to us to see you. I know you guys say that you talk privately, but to see you guys together makes us feel good because those were great memories for all of us with all you guys. And to see you guys in person showing love to each other, I think means a lot to
man,
us
we grown.
Too.
No, yeah. I think even with Hugh, and I don't want to speak for him, but I'm sure he probably heard some things that maybe was untrue about me and my character that factored into his reaction toward me. Like I said, I can't speak for him, but at the end of the day, like I said, I came here to Philly for one reason. Only, and that was to help win a championship. I remember in my press conference, I remember one of the things that I said. I came here, I wasn't trying to steal anybody's thunder. Mm-hmm. I wasn't trying to come here and steal anybody. I wanted to add it to the value of what, number one, defensively, what I knew that we had on defense, and offensively, be that X factor on offense.
12 hours and what, 50 minutes?
Correct.
12 hours and 50 minutes.
49 minutes.
To the birds and the boys and someone who played in this game many, 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 many times. And we love him, and he's back for another season with us every Thursday in studio starting at 7:30 for about an hour. Our guy, Mr. Jason Kelce. Jason, how are you, buddy? What up, dude?
I haven't blown into one of these in a long time. I'm really fired up about this.
How are you, pal?
Doing great. How's it going, Joe?
It's just great to see you back. And, of course, your beer is a great sponsor of our show and
Thank
the station.
Thank you very much. Yep.
How's that going?
Beer's doing good. It's beer. It's hard to do bad when you're beer. It's going really good.
Love it, man. Yeah, garage beer. Yes. Yeah. So how was the off-season?
Off-season was great. Got a lot of time down the beach. Got to spend a lot of time with the family. A little downtime. But I'm not going to lie. I am so geared up for football season to get going again. Yeah. I mean, there's something just like in the air, the atmosphere, the energy. And it's not even – I mean, this game alone is going to be incredible. But it's something about the entire league starting back up. It's that time of year, baby.
Of course.
I'm fired up.
You look svelte. And there's a phenomenon that occurs with everyone who gets done. Like they either – get real stout, or they get real plump.
Yeah.
I was the plumper.
You were the
initially.
Plumper?
You
he was a plumper.
I plumped. I plumped right. Hard. And
what'd you plump on?
Tasty cake and tasty cakes. So many tasty cakes.
Yeah, lots. Do it. Yeah, yeah.
Do it.
And just eating until it hurt still, and then not working out at all.
Yeah, that's a bad recipe.
But you are like, I don't know what, 50 pounds less than what you were playing at?
I was 290 when I played, so I'm right about 295. So I'm right around 30 pounds down.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you're carrying it well.
Thank you. Thank you. I feel good. I feel great. Me and Bo Allen had a little weight loss competition this
nice.
Summer. Which really motivated me. Since that competition has been over, I have been eating ice cream and Ritas and a lot of other things down the shore.
Did you win the competition?
I lost. Bo
oh,
got me.
No.
Oh, no.
Bo's got like a young influencer girlfriend and no kids.
Oh,
and,
boy.
Like, I'm like being tempted with pizza and ice cream every single day of
that
my life.
That sounds like an excuse.
It's impossible.
It's for sure an excuse, but I'm going to own that.
Yeah, and, that's all right.
He's doing well. Bo's in a really good spot. He's and he was 330 at one point. And I think now he's about 280.
Well, he had more to lose. That's easier for him to win that contest.
He did, but he started at a lower weight. Bo put on like 5 pounds. So it was a weird competition. It was like adding lean muscle while also losing body fat.
Oh.
He lost. He was under 16% body fat, and he gained like 5 pounds of muscle, which I don't even know how that's possible in the time frame that we did it.
Jeez.
But I'm not asking too many questions. No, he did great.
So, Jason, congrats since we've seen you on the expansion of the family in two different ways. So, first, your daughter, which is your fourth daughter, is that correct?
Fourth daughter.
Holy mackerel,
man. Four daughters. Bless you.
Two things, playing football and making daughters.
Yeah. You're getting that Olympic gymnastics team ready to go.
That's right.
Not
that's
a football team yet, but maybe a son in the future, we'll say. But
so, flag football or something. You know,
how is it with the new daughter?
New daughter is great. She's actually in the stage now where she's like one of the least problems that we have. She's sleeping a lot better. She's really started to come into her own. Like she's starting to make eye contact and really be aware of her surroundings, which is a great stage.
But you can't move around, so you don't have to chase
her. Exactly, yeah. She can kind of like roll a little bit, but very minimal movement. Yeah. The other ones are complete chaos.
Yeah, like you
they're
actually
fighting
have
each
to
other,
follow
they're
them
biting
every
each other.
Biting.
Yeah, my other one, my 2-year-old bit my 5-year-old the other day. My 2-year-old's hard
skin?
Too. Because
was skin broken with the bite?
No, she didn't bite her that
just
hard.
Just
it was a mark, but it wasn't.
Yeah. Still, but that's bad.
My 2-year-old is like the biggest problem right now because she's just like. It's crazy how like Mother Nature just like puts things into creatures. Like she can just manipulate you and look at you, and she does like her eyes and everything.
Oh
like,
yeah,
she's right out the womb able to like manipulate me, and I don't know how she was born with that ability. It was not learned behavior.
You fall prey to this manipulation.
She can do it to any man. Mm. She can also do it to women as well, but. It, for some
especially.
Reason, it works better on me.
Doesn't work on mom, does it?
Mom does not bite as hard. I cannot.
This feels very familiar to me, by the way.
This
feels very familiar.
And then, Jason, congrats to your mom and dad are soon to have a new daughter-in-law.
That's right.
I believe her name is Taylor Swift, and congratulations to your family and your brother's engagement.
As a Cleveland.com noted, local woman.
Local man.
They said local man for Cleveland, but she is a local woman, yes. Very appreciative for her to come on our show and do that.
Good for you, man.
Girls,
so
everybody all
Jason
around.
Kelce hosted one of the most watched interviews in the history of the world. Like, think about that. Like, seriously.
And the intro was great, man. It was classic. Have you spent more time with her? And we'll get to football in a moment, but with her not on tour now, have you obviously, I would assume, had more time with her over the last few months? Gotten to know her even better?
I've gotten to know her over the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
I just know, because she was torn and torn and torn and torn, and you know, that I thought that tour went on forever,
but,
it felt like.
She was, but she even when she's touring, she can operate, she's all over the place, and she can get places very quickly, and she's made from a very, very early moment an effort to connect in a lot of people in Travis's life, and he's done the same in her life, and I think that that's one of the reasons that they've gotten to where they're at right now, where they're engaged, and I think that the effort has been there on both sides to connect in both of their atmospheres.
Good, man.
So, you know, we've definitely, you know, as we've gotten to know her and her family, and as they've gotten closer, we've hung out more, but I would say this has been an ongoing thing for longer than a couple months.
Sure. Understood. All right, so let's get to football, man.
Yeah,
so, we'll talk a ton of Eagles, to say the least, but we are also familiar with the Eagles. Let's talk about the Cowboys.
Yeah.
They're the opponent tonight.
Sure.
How good are they, Jason? They used to be really good, not elite, but they were really good. Last year, they weren't close to really good. What do you think what are the 2025 Dallas Cowboys? What kind of challenge do they pose tonight?
I mean, you know, obviously they, new head coach, new defensive coordinator, they have some really good firepower on offense, right? George Pickens, CeeDee Lamb, Jake Ferguson. Their offensive line has been rebuilt. We'll see how that is. You know, I think for a long time, last decade, they've had one of the best offensive lines in football. And as they've aged and retired between Zach Martin and Travis Frederick and Tyron Smith, they've had to switch over. And they've invested capital, high draft picks. Yeah. So it's I think that they're going to be good on offense. I think that they're going to put up a lot of points, especially with the guys they have out wide, especially if they stay healthy. Defensively, they obviously just moved on from their best player, the guy who created the most issues for anybody that was going to play them. So I think, you know, they are, from a talent perspective, it doesn't appear that talented on defense. But I do think Matt Eberflus is a good defensive coordinator. He's been good pretty much everywhere he's been. He's had a top half of the league defense, even when that talent hasn't been there. They find ways to scheme things, even though it's a very simple scheme with very minimal.
When you say that it's a very simple scheme for Eberflus, what do you mean exactly?
Well, the philosophy, you're going to see two completely different philosophies tonight on both sides of both defenses for both teams. Eberflus comes from the Rod Marinelli Tampa 2 defense tree. They are a 4-3 defense. They don't really get out of that much. They might jump into a bare front certain situations, but it is going to be 4-3.
A bare
version.
Front is when you're covering the center and both guards with defensive linemen.
Correct. Five man front.
James, John's translating that for the audience.
That's good. I need that.
It's important.
So, they don't really. They do what they do, and they believe in doing fewer things and being able to play at a quicker, faster level because they can operate less with mental trying to figure things out.
And right? It's still mostly Tampa 2 stuff, so that they're two deep and they'll mix,
they'll mix
in
it up. I'm not going to, yeah, for sure. But that whole system is based around Tampa 2 and a four down defense for the most part.
Yeah. Jason, which is different. A lot of teams are moving more toward the three down.
Sure.
You know, like we are a 3-4 base.
Yeah, Eagles moved there in recent years.
The 4-3 is, I mean,
And even a lot of the 4-3 defenses will have incorporated 3-4 elements.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. There's fewer and fewer of these just straight up four down teams, and it allows those guys to play quickly. They'll move the front to kind of mask some of the weaknesses inside, especially in their subs coming onto the field. You know, they're going to try and do some things, but it's going to be a smaller menu, right?
It's really interesting.
So Jason,
Vic, it's the complete opposite. I mean, every single week could be a completely different defense.
Yep.
You know, you can be three down, you can be four down, you can be in like a 6-man front, uh-huh. and it could be a 3 or 4-man rush, and then all of a sudden it could be cover zero. So,
well, that's what I'm talking about. I believe that this season we're going to see a lot more of that kind of thing from our defense, from the Vic Fangio group, because these young kids, their second year in, they've learned so much more. Like, we can actually do some of this more exotic stuff.
Typically,
to make it hard on offenses.
They can, and they mixed it in a little bit last year at times. And I think typically the coordinators that have that menu, I usually find that the more talented and better those guys are, the less they resort to the extremities uh-huh. of them, right? Like, you look at the Super Bowl, there was a 4-man rush the entire game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the beauty of being able to do that stuff is, like, let's say, you know, one of our edges is out or something like that, and they're trying to mask that. They can blitz over there. They can line up another guy on the end of the line over there. They can there's more formations and different structural things they can do to mitigate some of those weaknesses. Mm-hmm. But I still think we're really, really talented on defense. I think if we stay healthy, I know we're missing, or I got some new pieces coming in the backfield, but up front, a lot of those guys played so well. I'm excited to see him this year.
Jason Kelce with us here in studio, as he will be every Thursday. This just happens to be a game day, Eagles-Cowboys tonight. One more on Dallas, and then we'll get to the calls here. Jason, James thinks Dallas finishes last in the division, that they've fallen that far, even when healthy. In your opinion, Dallas is average, below average, or above average?
Oh, man. The NFC has gotten a lot better, so I'm going to say they're below average. But I think that, you know, their offense is going to put up points. And this is where, like, you know, Eberflus has been this bend, don't break. There could be I could see them being above average very easily. I don't think that they're going to be a competitor this year in any real sense.
Yeah.
I think that they'll be competing for 3 or 4. Whether they'll be last against the Giants, who have revamped their defensive line and look a lot better, I don't know. But I don't think that it's going to be, you know, they're not, certainly not in the same sphere as Washington.
Yeah. One thing I'll say, and I think this will resonate with everyone, and the 2017 Eagles are an example of this. You kind of never know anymore until you see a team play. There's so much, you know, I'm going back in the day before free agency and all that, you know, that's 30 years ago now, but you kind of had a feel.
Yeah.
And now, like, there's so many new players, 20, 25 new players on every team every year. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at the defensive backfield tonight. Like, we don't know. Like, maybe those guys will hang in for the Eagles and be pretty good. Maybe they'll be horrendous. Well, maybe they'll be average. And like, you just don't know until you see a group play together anymore.
For sure. And everything is set up for parity, right?
Yes,
that's
right.
It's not even just like, you know, you don't know going into the season what these new players are going to be. Like, you know, Dallas is going to face a much worse strength of schedule than we are, right? Or Washington. So they're going to be playing teams and getting more opportunities to you know, win games than, you know, the Eagles are going to play the best teams in the league across the entire season. So it's going to be tougher sledding for us. And I mean, that's one of the reasons the NFL is so good at what they do. They're going to make it exciting.
On a game day.
How much does it matter that this staff is familiar with Matt Eberflus?
I think it matters. I think, but I preface that with, I think everybody's familiar with that, Matt Eberflus at this point. You know, I think.
I mean, the coach is trying to put one on one another. I mean, it runs deeper in some cases.
And it's better So one of the things that I always hated playing was a new coordinator, a new offensive coordinator, first week of the season that hadn't ever called a game. Because it's like,
what am I going off of? We are that team.
But you still have a new defensive coordinator with a new staff, with new players. So there's still going to be some different wrinkles, and coaches evolve, and there's always going to be a little bit of new stuff. But in general, it's better than, you know, a new defensive coordinator from the college where it's like, okay, what is this guy actually going to do?
Like last year, the Eagles against Halfley, the Packers.
And, you know, I think they knew based on, you know, the league talks and everybody, and there's preseason, you kind of have an idea going into it, but there's always going to be something in the middle of the game. And these guys are veteran enough that they'll be able to handle it.
One thing about a week one, you played in it. I mean, Chip had Washington. They had no chance in that game in 2013.
For sure.
Chip presented something.
It was the most dominating thing I've ever been a part of. I was just talking to Will Compton about that. I mean, it's that game, that first half was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Like, unbelievable. You take away that turnover in the red zone in the first drive.
Right.
It was, I mean, definitely the most dominant half football I've ever been.
That was wild. All right, coming up.
I will say this. Yeah. Back to the point right here. I want to make this. These guys playing against Vic every day in practice makes them much more capable of executing against anything they see on game day, because they've seen pretty much anything teams can throw at them because of what Vic Fangio has in reps on a daily basis in practice.
Let's talk to the voice that called it all last night, Merrill Reese, joining us. Merrill, good morning.
Morning. Is it morning already?
Yes, it is. I don't know what time it is. I'm all off. But we got a victory last night, Merrill, which is the most important thing. That was a bizarre opener, especially when you factor in the weather delay there, Merrill.
Everything about it was, and I've had a chance since the game, while you're calling it, you're commenting on what is happening. But to really reflect takes a little bit of time. And the more I think about it, the more I believe that it was ridiculous to throw Jalen Carter out of that game. I mean, if he dives at a quarterback's knees and injures him and does something like that. Now, I'm not saying he wasn't stupid to retaliate or to do something that was disrespectful and crude like that, but I don't think the penalty fit the indiscretion. I think that what they should have done is fine him. They should have penalized the Eagles 15 yards for unsportsmanlike conduct. But to take him out of the game before snap one and change that game dramatically, the effect, I hate when the officials have that kind of an effect on a game where they take the Eagles' best player, and meanwhile, Dallas, we talked all week about the fact that Dallas was out, they stupidly traded Micah Parsons, and they're going to be without their best player, and then all of a sudden the Eagles' best player is gone. I'm not saying that entered the officials' minds or that there was anything dishonest, but what I'm saying is I thought it was a ridiculous decision to throw him out of the game.
Well, it did change the game, Merrill. There's no question. I mean, I understood why they did it. It was so obvious. You know, it wasn't like, you know, sometimes there's like the guy's head flies back. You're like, wait, was there a spit there? It was so obvious that I feel like they almost had no choice but to throw him out. But it did, Merrill, affect the game.
Merrill spit on him.
So Merrill, what you're saying is it's okay to spit on player?
No, it's not okay. And it should cost you 15 yards on a fine. Not an elimination from the game, unless he was warned and then he did it again. But I think that's way over the top. But it's not as if there was a shot later that was a replay with one of the Cowboys throwing a punch at an Eagles player's head. I mean, that's a little bit different. But I mean, it's wrong, and it's a lack of discipline. And I guarantee you, he won't do it again. But to throw him out and change the entire game, I think is over the top. I think it's too much.
Merrill, let's spin forward here. So last year, the team suspended Jalen Carter for the first quarter of the Falcons game with an internal thing. I think maybe it came out that he missed the meeting, something that made them do that. Do you think the Eagles will have any punishment for Jalen Carter moving forward because of what happened last night?
Yeah, I'm sure they will, but we'll never know about it. I mean, whether it's financial or whatever they do, there'll be something involved there, and I'm sure that Nick Sirianni has really exploded and let him know what he thinks. And, of course, you can't do that.
Right.
I'm just saying to dramatically change a game like that for spitting, a little saliva. I mean, look, it's wrong. It's absolutely wrong. Penalize him. They gave the ball to the Cowboys near midfield, and then they're going to find Jalen Carter, and maybe the league finds Jalen Carter, but that's enough. Don't change the whole game because he spit. That's just way over the top.
Ron, it changed the game. I mean, the Cowboys went right down the field and scored their first three times. Armel, let's talk about the other stuff that happened, because there was a lot in that game. And I think we start with the quarterback. Merrill, last night was one of those nights where you had to watch the game to really feel it. Because Jalen Hurts' numbers last night weren't anything off the charts. I thought he played great last night. I thought he was in control. Only took one sack. Accuracy was there. Now, it was mostly underneath stuff except the shot to Dotson. But every time they needed a play, especially with his legs, Merrill, to ice the game, the two touchdowns, I thought Jalen was really good last night.
That's what great quarterbacks do. And he is a great quarterback. He is growing every year, every game. He is a great quarterback. He is a winner. He's the reason they won that game. He's the reason they are 1-0. The biggest reason, of course, because he didn't have a lot of time to throw, and he was on the run, and he was under duress, but he found ways to win the game, to make the final first down on a quarterback draw. I mean, he's just so good. The Eagles are so fortunate that he's their quarterback.
Well, he was really good last night. And they also got some contributions on the defensive side as that game went on from the rookies. I thought Makuba showed something. Jahad Campbell showed something. Those young kids out there, they got snaps, Merrill, and they made plays.
Yeah, and speaking of the defense, now, Hugh, you guys may see this differently, and I think Mike Quick saw the play a little bit more differently from me, but I thought the penalty on Reed Blankenship in the end zone, what was he to do when the pass was thrown in that direction? He was running towards the receiver, and he couldn't pull up at that point, and there was contact, and they called hitting a defenseless receiver. It wasn't if he went helmet to helmet with the head or anything like that. I thought that was a weak call.
The Blankenship one, they had a lot of penalties last night on defense. The Blankenship one was one. It was almost like, man, what is he supposed to do? He's flying full speed. That was a tough one last night on the Eagles. And they just throw those flags down, Merrill, when you're anywhere near the head. But that one, I fell for Reed on that. Merrill Reese with us here as we react to the Eagles' victory last night over the Dallas Cowboys. Merrill, that game, you know, I don't know if they just got cold. That game was so different after the delay. I mean, it was an offensive game the whole game. And then, Merrill, they come out of delay and almost no one can move the football.
Yeah, it was like the air went out of the balloon. Everybody was flat at that point. But fortunately, the Eagles had the lead and they maintained the lead. And they're 1-0 at this point. And, you know, maybe we should come to expect this. Last year, too, the first four games, well, they won in Brazil. Then they lost the next week to Atlanta. Then they went and beat a bad New Orleans team, even though the Saints were off to a good start. And then they were absolutely horrible in Tampa Bay. I think this is a product of not playing regulars at all in the preseason. Now, wait a minute. Before we jump to that, I want to say that I agree with that now. I've completely changed my thinking. I know why they do it. They do it because it's a long, hard season, and you want to keep your players fresh, and you don't want them injured in the preseason. Detroit plays their regulars in the preseason, and Detroit was the best team throughout much of last season. So they got to the playoffs, and they had 16 players on injured reserve, and the Eagles, who started slowly, who were 2-2, only lost one more game the rest of the way, and they had 22 healthy starters in the playoffs. So that's the price you pay for guarding against injuries early.
Well, it is, and the good thing is you get a win. They didn't play great. They didn't play their best, I'll say it that way, but they still got a victory, which is the important thing. Merrill, we appreciate you hopping on, and enjoy a weekend watching the NFL, and we got a game tonight as well. The team we're going to see next week, the Chiefs and the Chargers tonight. Merrill, have a great weekend, and we'll catch up soon.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
There he goes. Merrill Reese there, the voice of the Philadelphia Eagles.
Joining us now, as he will all season long. Now, normally it'd be on Mondays, but since the game was last night, Donovan McNabb back for another season with the WIP Afternoon Show. We are honored. Donovan, thank you for calling.
Man, that was the most exciting introduction I had heard. That was awful. Come on, pick it up. Come on. I know it's Friday. I need some excitement from you.
What's all right, here we go. Ladies and gentlemen. The best quarterback in the history of the Philadelphia Eagles.
There you go. You know him as number five. Donovan McNabb back with us again. Donovan, thanks for calling.
I like that.
Oh, you know what? Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
There we go. There we
and
go.
And that's what I'm talking about.
There we go. So, Donovan, we've been talking about the Jalen Carter incident for a lot of the show. I wonder what your reaction was when you saw what he did, when he did it, and then getting thrown out of the game.
It was just immature. It was immature. It let your team down. There's no place for it in sports in general. Even if you were provoked, whatever it may have been, you got to be smarter than that to understand that, you know, you're going to sit there and spit on the quarterback. I don't know what he was thinking. I'm sure he's apologetic and he's looking forward to possibly moving on, but I'm sure the league is going to come down and give him a hefty fine, if not a suspension, too.
Yeah, I mean, from a gameplay perspective, that's their entire defense is based around the havoc that Jalen Carter creates, from pass rush on the edge to the secondary, and with him not being there, I just, you know, injuries happen, but for a guy to, you know, almost voluntarily take himself out of the game like that, pretty big deal, pretty big deal. How did you think? Let's talk to you about the other Jalen. Jalen Hurts' game last night. What did you think?
I thought the offense looked a little stagnant at times. I mean, I know that, you know, statistically it looked as if, you know, he was in control. He was efficient. There were shots downfield that I think we missed. Offensively, we just weren't able to take. I mean, the offensive line did a fairly decent job up front, giving them some time. Until pretty much after the delay when they decided to start blitzing and bringing more guys from the strong and the weak side, which obviously forced Jalen to move in the pocket, get his eyes off of the receivers downfield and try to avoid the rush. But overall, I think for the way Jalen controlled the offense and a little bit of, you know, the balance that we tried to do, I think it's a way of starting out the first game of the season, and we'll be interested to see how things continue to progress from this point on.
Yeah, that's the thing I'm looking at with them last night, Five. I'm like, I wonder how much of that was early season rust. Are we not seeing the entire field? Because I thought that was a little bit of an issue last year, and I'm speaking more about Jalen and from the passing standpoint. Were you able to sort of – When you watch him drop back from the TV copy, are you able to like see whether or not guys are getting open early, or is he improvising and making plays because there's nothing there available to him?
Well, let's just say this, Ike. I mean, and we played the game, and being from an offensive standpoint, and as I'm watching, number one, I'm not gonna sit and come down and say he's missing receivers, and you know, because I just don't know what the progression is. Right. And I remember talking to Jalen a few times, you know, last year when, you know, I would talk to him almost every other week or so. He would ask, what did I see? What do I think? And, you know, that was kind of the first question of, you know, what's your progression? And when I would go to different plays of just, are you reading front side? Is your X your number one receiver? Is it to your Y, to your back? And coming backside to the backside dig, obviously, is usually number three a number four in the progression. And so as I watched, you know, from the TV copy, I seen some guys being able to come free a couple of times, but also seen it during when they decided to blitz and they brought a little bit of the heat. And as quarterbacks, we are going to miss some receivers. If it's not seeing them come free or not feeling like he's open when, you know, you can place the ball in different positions for that. But I will say that it just wasn't the downfield attacking type of defense versus a team that played, I would say, a decent percentage of man, you know, so that, you know, you would think we would attack that with the guys we have.
He did get the ball to the tight end, which I know that is a sweet spot for you. So at least Dallas Goedert got nine catches in there, too. Donovan, I wanted to ask you about Landon Dickerson, who, you know, just had – you know, knee surgery a few weeks ago, had a back issue.
Right.
You were a guy who played through pain quite a bit. A few notable examples. As a player, how do you know when you know, you want to play through pain, you want to be there for your guys, but also if you're limited in a way that makes you not yourself, it, like, how do you figure out when the right time to actually try to push through it or say, you know what, I'm quite good enough? How do you make that decision?
You know what, I could probably add to this with me. That usually that decision is from outside. As a player, okay, we're going to continue to fight through the pain, and we're going to continue to be there for our guys. But it's usually a decision from Nick or from their head trainer, to make that decision for you. And it's tough for us to swallow. It's a pill that we don't want to kind of ingest, I guess, so to speak, because, you know, we're so used to being out there. One place that we don't want to be is on the sideline when we feel like we can't contribute. And so from what I understand, the reports that he didn't practice a lot during the week, and they pretty much got him ready for game time. If I recall, that was the information that I heard during the game. So if this continues on and we see kind of being hobbled out on the field, I believe they will make that decision to sit him, you know, if it's one or maybe a couple weeks, to kind of regain his strength and to alleviate some of that pain and pressure.
Yeah, I mean, hell, they leave it up to us, man. We are usually going out there to play.
If you leave it up
to the player, most of us are going to go out there and play. When you look at the offense, how much would you chalk up to lack of playing time in the preseason, rust coming in early? Like, how much of that do you think factors into what we saw last night?
100%. That's why whenever I talk to a lot of people about these particular games, I don't really hold any weight until after week four, going into week five. Because to me, taking away the preseason, and I don't care if you're practicing together with these other teams or whatever, being in a game situation and that game adrenaline is a whole lot different than just sitting there going to practice. Like, you know how it is when we practice against each other after about three or four times. You know, it's like, man, let's just get through these reps. When are the twos up? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, what? Okay,
hold on, when's special teams?
Hold on,
I was in that special teams practice. Hold on.
I was at the movies at that time. My bad.
Yeah. You're speaking from a starter standpoint. Yes.
But you know what? It's not.
But I know what you're saying, though. Yes, I understand what you're saying. Yes.
And we're going to start to see teams that we expected to be up in the upper echelon to look as if they haven't practiced or unorganized at times because they haven't played in game situation. And I think, you know, it's a situation where I think, you know, Rodgers is going to have to come up with something of these owners, because you're taking away from these guys' ability to be ready for the beginning of the season. I know you want to add games and make more money in that situation, but there are guys on the street that weren't able to display their talents in game situations enough to be able to help these teams, and we're just sitting there watching lackluster football for the first couple of weeks.
Yeah, and I think it hurts. We were actually talking about that right before you got on. As a fan, it sucks to get excited for the NFL season, and then all of a sudden you start watching it, and you're like, wait a minute, this is not the NFL yet. You know, we get a precious few games, and them spending a month just warming up, getting good, is just not the way it used to be. You know, so I know I sound like an old guy, but
when the NBA starts, it's like guys are working themselves in shape in the beginning of the season, and for me, it's like for NFL, it's like guys are. It's almost like coaches and players are working themselves into season mode to see what they can and cannot call or what they should call in certain situations. And I think that's what we're going to see early part of the season.
All right, Donovan. Well, we are excited to have you back
once again.
And at least it was a win. Look, it wasn't pretty, but it was a win. So 1-0, and look forward to talking to you after the Chiefs game.
Yeah, man, bring a little more energy next week.
Yeah, right? Try to match our energy.
I need to bring the energy. Okay, I got you. Sounds good. Look forward to talking to you guys next week.
The best of interviews on Sports Radio 94 WIP.